Record. There we go. All right, so what, the new year? 1, 2, 9, right?
Okay. Yeah, 9.
We're recording for a podcast. Hey, Cam.
Hey.
If you go around the table and introduce yourselves.
I'm Cody.
I'm Colleen.
I'm Tom.
Rob.
Cole.
The camera.
Joshua.
I'm the real Ben.
I am the realer Ben. Comparative, possibly the superlative.
Ooh, and I'm Willow. So today, and oh,
you
Evan
just tried to shake your computer's hand.
I did not. And Evan is joining us via chat or Skype, however you want to say that. So today we're talking about emergent leadership, which is something that Tom brought up on the Whitechapel forums. It's all his fault, indeed. He made me purchase books and read them instead of sleeping because I didn't have time for anything else. So do you want to start this off or do you want me to?
I think you should.
Okay.
I haven't been taking care of this before.
Okay.
So I have no idea what's going on.
It's all right. So we basically, the way that we have leadership and that groups form is changing. Mostly due to how connected we are and how instant communication is, and that the price in bunny ears of forming groups is basically dropped through the floor. Price including both monetary, dedication, your time, your energy, etc. So it takes me a click to join a group. Obviously, if I want the group to succeed, it's going to take more effort than that, but that's all it takes to actually join it. So, one of the things that Tom brought up was Anonymous and how they've kind of taken on the Church of Scientology. And so you have the 4chan community, and then you have the B forums, which are notoriously immature, but also interesting at times. And they kind of took on a very big organization, this sort of big, and have actually had quite an impact and are have had activity in the real world has very much increased in this action that's been taken offline and put in the real world. So that's interesting. And what's also interesting about that is that all the members are anonymous. And so you don't have a leader with a name and a face stepping up and dictating what should be happening. You have a community of anonymous people saying, hey, this should happen, and then actually acting upon it. And what's also funny about that is that they are wearing V for Vendetta masks, which is, you know, if you've seen the movie and read the comic book, that's... Sorry, okay. Too many things going on. Okay, so, and then you also have in, I read as much as I could of Here Comes Everybody, which is Clay Shirky, who is amazing. I would like to have a beer with him sometime. Basically, he writes about technology and sociology, which is what I wanted to do my college career on, and they told me that nobody did it. So I wish he had published this book a few years ago instead of now, but that's okay. And he talks about, two different things. Stop me if I'm rambling too much. One is the case of a lost phone where a woman left her phone in a cab and it was stolen out of the cab or picked up. You know, and it used to be finders keepers. Well, the woman who took the phone from the cab was taking pictures with it, and because it uploaded automatically to the network, they were able to find out who it was. There was a website built around it. There was a huge public outcry for the police to get the phone back, because the New York police, basically, if you leave your phone in a cab, it's reported as lost, not stolen. But they were able to find the person, and so they figured, if we know who took the phone, you should be able to go get it. And all of this is over, admittedly, a $300 phone. That's pretty expensive, but you have several thousand people, you know, crashing the first server that they had. They had to get a bigger one, and it was this huge thing. And after it was all done, the groups dispersed. So a group formed around this public outcry or this ideal, and then accomplished what they came to do, and then we're done. and that can either be seen as really cool because you have a really big group coming together to do something and everybody threw in their own expertise, and you had lawyers and you had police officers saying, you know, these are the forms you need to fill out, all this stuff going on, and or it's a group of people pursuing a really petty thing to the point of taking out a lower class single mother who's like 16, which is pretty shitty. And so you have both sides of that. The other thing is the case of the church with the pedophiles and the, you know, the choir boys and the, so many good jokes. You remember that with the Catholic Church and how they were bouncing around the priests that were abusing children? And so a group formed around that. Well, they had the exact same situations of a public trial, they had the same number of abused children, the church was doing the exact same thing, but when they had the internet to help them out, it actually got pretty big and international, and the church actually had to do something about it. So again, you have a group forming around an idea, having it taken care of, and then dispersing. That one had more leaders, though. That one actually had public leaders. So I want to talk about how groups that already exist, figuring out what they want to do and then doing it, or groups forming around an idea, accomplishing and then dispersing, because B on 4chan already existed and they figured out something they wanted to do. And they did it, and they still exist, even though it's still in progress, or some might say that they've made the impact that they want to, whatever. We also have ideas trumping identities. So in the good old-fashioned comic book world, especially Batman, you know, it's the you can't kill an idea, even if you can kill a person. So especially with Anonymous, you have individuals who have an idea, but you don't have a face to go with it. And I want to know how, in the past few meetings, I haven't really been talking much about the future. I realize this, I talked about how things are changing us now and how it's changing our society, but I need to refocus and remember that this is a transhumanist discussion and we need to talk about the potential of how this is going to affect us in the future. So I also want to talk about tribalism and anybody that's read Eastern Standard Tribe.
We're talking about the future.
The future is now.
And Evan says, ideas are bulletproof in the chat and stuff. But that was, yeah, that was now. Cool. So do you want to add to that?
Okay, so I guess one of the things which I was first thinking about when the notion emerged to me is kind of what is a leader in a decentralized group with a recognizable head, and how you have a situation there whereby the leader becomes the idea, and so what's the place for leadership in an evolving society? Is leadership just the act of having a good idea and then letting other people pick up and run with it?
Mm-hmm.
And past that, and is there a requirement for someone to carry a project through from start to finish? Even this whole thing now.
Sounds like that's asking a little bit about the importance of personality in keeping group cohesion.
Right.
Because you can have a group that comes together around ideas, or you can have a group that comes together around someone who can express those ideas in a way that is unique and compelling. And one of those groups is going to last after that leader moves on, the other one isn't.
When you have groups forming on the internet, you have the anonymity, you don't have the feeling of judgment behind your actions. So give people a lot more freedom. I think it would give people a lot more freedom to act in ways that they wouldn't normally. And at that point, becoming a leader in groups like that would not be someone who sits there and types 45 hours a day about how wonderful they are, but somebody who actually gets up and goes out and does something. And that always becomes, that's been my argument for years, is it's actions basically speak louder than words. And so if you get these groups together and they start performing actions and everybody feels like they're in this cohesive unit, and then they're going to go out and do something too. It's going to, I don't know, it's going to set a standard for behavior in the group, and then people are going to start accomplishing goals. It's a very powerful thing when people start focusing on single goals together and accomplish them. But I think the anonymity gives it a lot more freedom from judgment. People a lot of times are thinking, well, what if I do this? What's everyone going to think? If you're in a group where everybody that you know is, you know, scattered around several states, then you're not going to have to worry about somebody randomly showing up and seeing whether or not you're doing anything right. But if you accomplish something and you put it out there and you show people how to do it, then they're going to start taking their cues from that. And they're going to be like, how'd you do that? Where'd you go? What'd you do? Who'd you talk to? And then it starts moving on and teaching other people how to do something.
Is anonymity an exception to the rule, though? Because a lot of people who are in groups are invested in group identity to some degree.
Right.
So I'm not sure how they're making use of anonymity in that.
Well, an example might be Billboard Liberation Front, which is very focused on anonymity, obviously, because of what they do, but at the same time, it's such a compelling idea that it's provided group cohesion for years.
Right.
And we're talking about a group that came to exist long before some of these new tools even were in existence, but has evolved since then in a way that I think allows those tools to empower others to take similar actions.
I think one of the things about the online group action occurring has to do with there not being a necessary investment, that you have the choice of making an investment. It's not an obligation. And so if you're on the B boards and you say, I'm going to have this, you know, I think we should have a protest on this day in front of this Church of Scientology. I'm going to be there. Anyone else can show up if they want to. There's not the obligation of, well, you said you were going to be there and you weren't. That happened. But if you show up, then it's appreciated without the possibility of being let down if you don't go. As someone who has a lot of obligations in their life, that's very appealing. Some of my good friends, we just say, hey, I'm going to be at this coffee shop on this day at this time. Anybody that wants to join me, that's fine. Otherwise, I'm going to be there anyway.
This is something that's kind of started to happen with cell phones and the ability to plan things on the fly. Mm-hmm. What just struck me as being really curious is how the hell did Anonymous pull off the first demonstration? The first one they did was, by all accounts, the most successful one they had. They got someone, it was 11,000 people to show up in 93 different cities worldwide simultaneously, which is really, really quite surprising.
I think it was kind of the flash mob thing.
Yeah.
You create a loco, like in revolutionary parlance, you know, like a focus for all these things to, you know, form themselves around. So for instance, like the Ron Paul money bombs or the variety of things that they did, where they just like, somebody just came up with it, you know, this number tax is a shelling point, and everybody just sort of organized around it.
It's where I think the newness of an idea can really be something too. If it hasn't been done before, there's this more of a desire to participate than if it's the fifth time or the 10th time or the 20th time. There's diminishing returns with some of these strong but single idea based.
I was just wondering if there isn't also then more responsibility for showing up that first time.
That does make a huge difference, because if there's nothing to talk about, then it's not going to get passed on. If nobody shows up, then nobody's going to talk about it. They're not going to be like, oh, you should have seen what we did today. And then nobody else is going to hear about it. But if people go and show up, even if there's like five people there, then it's going to have the effect of moving on through word of mouth, which is the best advertising you can get for anything, really.
What's curious is that is that it does seem that the protests that Anonymous have done against Scientology have had diminishing numbers. Some areas they seem to grow and gone back down again. I haven't been following it closely for a while, but my impression's been that they've been, I'm not sure if they're even really doing organized protests at this point, but they did seem to be getting diminishing numbers, which is kind of the opposite of what has traditionally happened in protest groups, where you usually get a small people of powerful devotees out there spreading the word as much as they can and trying to attract all comers, but this was an instance of anyone who could show up who wanted to did.
Well, then is that a comment on the attention span of people that are on those boards? Because in the case of the church, those numbers grew almost to 10 times the amount in a year, where their first meeting was 30 people, and by the time they had a meeting with the guy that was up on charges, they had 27,000 members. That's almost tenfold. And so, in that case, it's growing.
I think this might speak to kind of cult of personality versus following an idea versus following a personality.
Like a charismatic
movement grow because they have a personality which motivates people.
Okay, can I add something on that real quick?
It seems like since we're getting rid of social prestige and we're getting rid of a lot of the things that traditionally come with leadership when you're creating a non-anonymous group, I'm wondering if being a part of a critical mass isn't the substitute. That feeling of, if I wasn't there, this wouldn't happen, that happens the first time, or
it's like
any time up until you have enough people that it keeps going.
I think that's a really good point. I think another side of it may be how in the last 8 or 9 years the kind of official governmental police response to organized planning of any kind has changed dramatically. The longer that you do the same thing, especially if it's edgy or if it's slightly illegal or a lot illegal. I made the point. But that may have something to do with that, those where it diminishes versus where it's something that's considered socially uplifting and people don't feel threatened in continued participation.
I think a lot of these groups too come from the fact that people are starting to kind of supersede the social structure of things and they're seeking out like minds. And because they, it's really difficult. Like when I was in New Orleans, it's the least educated city in the country. It's very difficult for me to talk to anybody down there without trying to come down to their level. And then I moved up here and I noticed everybody's like intelligent. And I so remember how wonderful that is. But without that option, without the ability to get a hold of people directly through the net, you're not going to have as many movers and shakers having access to each other. You're going to have to do it the hard way and sort through all the trash to find the treasure. And so it's giving people, if you have a common cause or a common goal, it's very easy to get online and go whip up a group and find people that are interested in the same thing. And then, move it in a direction that ends up maybe benefiting someone. And it's actually been happening a lot up here. I'm actually kind of proud that people are doing things like this. It's given me a lot of hope that there are people out there that will keep moving things.
I think that speaks to the ease that you can form groups. I think it's interesting that, and I would definitely like feedback on this, that the Seattle meetup, transhumanist meetup group, existed for a while before I got out here. And I went to a few of those, and there are maybe one or two people sometimes, usually no one. But then because I know certain people and I know they have an interest, I'm able to say, hey, if I set up a meeting myself, will you come? And that kind of speaks to a lot of the things that Libby and I have done. Libby's not here tonight, but she was my roommate in Bloomington, bright red hair. We make a good duo with organizing things. We were able to create a dance night because there was a desire there. And it was just, we stepped into the roles that we saw as clear and the community wanted. But when we left, it kind of fizzled out. If the community wants it, why aren't they doing it? So, going back to the transhumanist meeting groups that were going on beforehand, the desire's there. There are people here. Why do I enjoy seeing all of you every other week, which is awesome, and I really appreciate you giving me your time, but it didn't work once a month?
I think there's a few reasons for that. I mean, none of my experience. Suddenly realizing I know, I've started a number of groups on various interests, much like this, just, hey, you know, I like this idea. I know a few people who like this idea too. Why don't we get together and drink some tea and talk about it online or in places such as this. But a lot of people don't have that initiative. A lot of people have that interest, but they wouldn't themselves say, hey, you know what, let's get some people together after this and talk about this. And without somebody doing that, they tend to not get together.
One of the reasons that I was able to throw such large parties in New Orleans is because I was able to find everybody that had a useful skill and be like, hey, go over here and do that. And I just kind of provided the direction to get all of the talent aimed in the same direction, and then things would happen. And usually it takes somebody who's going to stand up and be like, oh, hey, we should do this. It's got to have the idea out there first. There's not everybody is so extroverted.
Some people like, I have a, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I have a chaos magic group that I run at the circle once a month.
Chaos magic?
Yeah. And you know, it was just something I started because, you know, I had an interest in the subject and I knew that there were people in the area who did as well. And so I said, hey, why don't you guys come? And we made up some flyers so that everybody would know about it. I've done some word of net and stuff. But there have been a couple of months consecutively when I haven't shown up, and then the thing completely dies when I'm not there. And I told people, and like, you know, this isn't about me. This isn't like, I don't want you guys to come and like dig me. You know, whether I'm here or not, the space is there. I've booked the room and made those arrangements, and you guys can come. But it just fizzles because nobody else that's attending seems to want to say, you know, remind people, hey, we're getting together, or
That's what starts bringing into focus the responsibility that comes with leadership. A lot of people socially look at leadership as, hey, I'm in charge, you have to do what I say. A lot of people don't understand that leadership isn't necessarily being in charge of people, but it's definitely a responsibility to them. Like, if you can notice that everybody is wanting something of a specific nature or a specific topic to be started and run, then it's whether or not you choose to step up into that leadership position, and whether or not you choose to add that direction, give those people that direction. Will it give them an outlet that they can start flipping ideas off of each other and continuing? But a lot of times, again, it comes down to people's personality, whether or not they are the movers and the shakers, or whether or not they need a little bit of direction.
And what that has to do with the future, I have no idea, but I was just responding to
it. It's good.
You might be able to focus that a little bit for the future, just based on what you were saying. What was occurring to me is the question of, I mean, we're seeing the all sorts of new tools arriving for assisting organization. And I guess what occurred to me listening to the two of you is, are these new tools changing the nature of the leadership that's required, or are they simply facilitating the same old kind of leadership that people have always used?
There's a little of both. I think there's a lot of the latter. I think you're going to find that, we were talking about this in the last meeting, I think you're going to find that with any media. You know, a lot of times it's just going to be a new medium for the same stuff.
It is.
But you're also going to have, you know, things that are facilitated that, you know, stuff like the anonymity thing, you know, who knows if that would have ever been able to happen another way. I'm sure there have been similar things that have happened for a long time, but there will be people who find ways to use the media in novel ways to create groups that are different than what's happening.
Just a couple of things as a follower that add to me showing up when somebody needs something that it should change because of technology are, first, the basic psychology of seeing. It's just like you'll trust a study more if you can see an MRI scan with a picture of somebody's head. If I can see a website that has a little flyer with a picture of something, I'll, for whatever reason, trust it more than a flyer stapled to a wall. because I've been using the internet for long enough that it just seems more natural.
I once didn't make it to a club night because the guy handed me a flyer and it said I will lose this in a heartbeat. Where is it online? Because I'll remember the URL. And it's like, I don't do the internet.
For whatever reason, URLs feel more trustworthy. And the other thing is being able to see who else is showing up. Even if, because it's all statistics. If I think that maybe one or zero people are going to show up to a thing that I care more about, versus there will be, you know, 10 other people there at a discussion that I care slightly less about, I'm going to go to the one with 10 people. And I think this is one of the reasons that, because you know there's going to be somebody, but that first meeting with just one person is enough to kill the interest of anyone who shows up. But just things like meetup.com, as, you know, people respond yes, no, or maybe, and you can see the yeses, and you can see their pictures.
You can also see the nos and the maybes, though.
Yeah, but I mean, that kind of being able to know helps immensely.
Evan in chat says, introverts unite over chat, and also to stand behind the leader and support him or her when they're under fire. I don't know what it's like to really follow people into things. I've always created things. Well, the studio. I kind of do that.
So, just to comment on some of the stuff that's been said recently. It strikes me that there's sort of two different kinds of leadership that are being talked about. So one is sort of formal leadership, where you already have an organization in place with a hierarchical structure. And really, that's the only way to, like, be in charge of other people. I mean, like, there's no one there, you can't be in charge of them. I guess the other kind of leader is really, like, someone who maybe is better term facilitator, someone who just, like, gets stuff done.
Okay.
And I mean, I'm not coming up with anything new, I'm just trying to clarify things a little bit. I mean, obviously, there's overlap. Ideally, there'd be perfect overlap. Obviously, that's not entirely the case.
I think it makes sense to differentiate between facilitators and leaders.
But I think that with a lot of new technology, there's a lot of ways where essentially organizations can be much more flat, and so there's not as much room for people who want to wear a big hat and, you know, swagger a lot. But I mean, the same amount of stuff does need to get done. It can just sort of get done in more perhaps ad hoc manner.
So how do you, with the trends that are emerging with the cost of joining a group and basically dropping out and organizations becoming flat, as Theo noted, what do you see? More leaders in big hats? Do you see more facilitators? How do you think that's going to go and why?
It's all going to depend at that point on the convictions that each person has.
Yeah.
It's going to depend on what goal they're trying to accomplish, whether or not it's something that, you know, like revolves around abortion or baby seals getting clubbed or maybe saving a forest wetland or something.
Well, I can tell you what I hope. I would hope that the more communication technologies are available to somebody, the more choices they have, and the more they will sort of emergently realize a hierarchical sort of leadership dynamic, just because people won't have to listen to other people telling them so much, they'll be able to go for something else. In doing that, they'll start to figure out that they can think for themselves and make their decisions. And then those people will interact, and there'll be more heterarchy than hierarchy. But, you know, there's plenty of cult of personality still on the internet. People who can attract people can use the internet to attract people, and use flashy web videos to attract people, to convince them of whatever they're trying to do.
But on level, it's much more. There's still a hierarchy, but it's much more closer. Like I went to a university, a low tax, the guy runs something awful.com. He's just this guy, but he was able to bring in a group of 12 people. You know, he has a lot of sort of close folks, but still he has to talk to them. He's not making, you know, fabulous amounts of profits. You know, it's still much more. Human sort of level, not prone to that sort of thing.
I think it also starts begging the identification of, since people are talking about different kinds of leaders, there's going to be the leaders who are trying to accomplish things for people, and then there's also the leaders who are going to be trying to accomplish things for the ideas. What is their commitment towards? Is it to the people who are following the idea, or is it to the idea? And also, recently, I just read a Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, and it put into focus really very strongly that how can you have any convictions if you don't stand up for them? And how are anybody else going to know how to stand up for their convictions without seeing it done first? And so that's also going to become a point in translation for the new social interactions that people are having.
Well, I think things such as what happened against the Church of Scientology, I think they raise interesting and legitimate questions about integrity and sort of standing behind what you do or what you're convicted in or what you're about, and being able to face your opponent, in scenery, and not sort of be shady about it.
Evan in chat says he was talking to a friend today on the approximation of INTJ personalities within leadership positions. Specifically, they would only assume control of any situation under duress and would generally only do it when they specifically would be the best tool for the job. It seems that this type of grouping is becoming much more prevalent as the net brings us closer together and we become more intertwined. It honestly gives me hope that mental processes, vice, voice, some type of super religious fervor will prevail. Yes, sorry. I can't actually think through things and read at the same time. You want to bring up your point?
This may be a diversion, but as we've been kind of, I'm trying to come up with a different angle to look at the questions of these types of leadership. And as we've been talking about goals, we've been processing out these types of groups that are goal-oriented and types of groups that, for the purpose of this conversation, I'm going to call story-oriented, where it's, let's, for instance, there's a group of people who get together as clowns, and they used to go down and bug the Minutemen who are patrolling down in San Diego. They dress up as clowns with alien antennas, and they bug the Minutemen saying, "Are you from Earth? Are you from Earth?" And completely, I mean, this was, and it's a great story to tell, but they were kind of an informal ad hoc group that was increasing disorder for another group versus a kind of formal leadership that you were talking about, where that's goal-oriented and that kind of creates these more corporate structures for achieving a particular goal where the roles are much more clearly defined.
I guess, so, in your particular example, I don't see the difference. I mean, like, they both look goal-oriented to me.
Mm-hmm.
One, I guess you didn't really give a good example of a previous one, but I guess you could just say, throw an IBM, right? I mean, like, they make computers.
Yeah.
Your other group's goal is to disrupt another group, but
right.
I mean, it's still a...
Well, let me give an example of kind of a formal leadership role. On a film set, you have a very strict hierarchy where everyone has defined roles. They come together for a specific period of time before they disperse, and you always know exactly who you're reporting to, how you're reporting, how that's going to be accomplished. And in the other kind, the informal leadership, I think you're going to see that instead of a head with a number of appendages, it's more of kind of that flash mob sort of mentality where everyone has a common piece that they're doing, but they're operating independently, and that may actually be more empowering in the short term, that kind of independence that wow, I could be a part of this and do my own thing without the consequences of having people single me out for it.
But the short term is the key in that, because when your groups start to dwindle in number, it's becoming too organized.
an underlying, yeah. What I think is kind of an underlying distinction to that, it seems like the things which are changing are not whether or not it needs to be. There's the question of whether it is emergent leadership or whether it's very specific and hierarchical. Mm-hmm. And then there's the question of whether it could be emergent or hierarchical. And underlying it is whether how much synchronization needs to happen. Like if there's alien costumes, people can show up any day of the week and harass these people, and all they need to do is, you know, bring your own antennae.
Right.
And
face paint.
Right. Versus putting on, say, a theatrical production where you would need some leadership and some planning.
Sense. Getting back to what Evan said and tying all this in together also with the types of leaders that do step up, usually they are the ones that are best qualified for the job, and you can always tell the people who are best qualified for the job because they don't want to do it. Because they've done it and they know exactly what a pain in the ass it's going to be to have to do it again. And that's why they're like, no. That's why it's taken so long for them to get me on the board at the NWPA, because I'm like, no, this is going to happen, but I'm trying to shirk the responsibility as long as possible.
It's the people who want to be in power never should be.
Right.
Yeah.
And the people that are best for the job usually don't want to do it, but if somebody has to do it, then they'll step up. And that's what this is offering, is you've got a lot of people that are really just ready and waiting for something to happen. And then if they find other people that are making things happen too, then it's going to be inspirational. They're going to step up. They're going to do something on their own. They're going to get together with the group. The group's going to start doing things together, and it's going to start this unification of people, some of which are, you know, in 6 or 8 states away. But it's still going to start bringing people together of the common goals and the like minds. People that are waiting and they're ready for something to happen. And they're much more than happy to step up and do something.
So, okay. Just left me. So maybe we can talk about, as we gain more people with population and how geography is changing and how the number of people that you have available to you, that was a note I made earlier, it's a complete change of topic, but we seem to be at an end of that thread.
Well, I mean, I think one interesting thing to look at, right, is essentially the urbanization of the world. And it, obviously it's not uniform, but I mean, it's still happening roughly consistently around the world, certainly at different rates. And I think what you'll find essentially is that although over the last, say, century, the global population's increase probably like a factor of 8 maybe. Like, I mean, I'm just pulling this number out of the air. I really don't know. But the number of interpersonal connections, and I'm pulling this number out of the air again, I mean, has gone up dramatically farther, just because cities allow for much more broad and I guess maybe wide set of connections between people. That is, like, if you're in a small town and you've got like 30 neighbors, then they're all your best friends and you can't really do anything about it.
Have you lived in a small town before? They're not all your best friends.
No. But I mean, do you understand what I'm saying?
Where, yeah, I mean, you're gonna know everybody around.
When there's less constituents, there's less chance for random possibility to unite you with someone that you've been meaning to meet your entire life and never knew it. If there's 800,000 people around, you're gonna have that happen more often than if there's 300.